Who's who with these two?
Garrett.
I'm Cam.
Ladies and gentlemen, 3, 2, 1. Garrett Kroger.
Thank you very much, Kenny. I'm Gary Kroger. That's Kenny Sizer. This is the Gary and Kenny Show. Kenny, how are you?
Actually, I'm getting over a really bad cold, but I'm getting over it. I seem to be recovering. And sometimes, you know, back in the day, you'd get these colds and they'd last for months and months and months. But this is a short one, so I'm very grateful for that.
Well, as interesting as that is, I'd like to bring our guest out.
Please do.
Do you mind? Do you
I
mind?
Hope
I want to get right to Susie because I actually have a memory with her that
Wait,
I don't
Gary,
think she's...
I want to hear the details of Kenny's cult.
Thank you.
You know, do you? Okay.
People
Kenny,
ask how you
go
are.
Go deeper.
No.
Go deeper. No, no.
No, but people do. They go, how are you? And then you give them the answer.
Nobody cares.
You don't
Nobody
expect
cares.
That I have bronchitis to be the answer. The answer is kind of, I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, that's what I should
have
said.
It was really just a formality.
All right, I'm fine. I'm fine.
All right, let me bring out Susie.
Please.
Because I'm very excited to talk to Susie, and I know you are too. Our guest today is Susie Essman, stand-up comedian that I remember from several years ago. But of course, we know her as Susie Green from Curb Your Enthusiasm, the seminal program that ended very recently. But also, you know, she's a writer, a producer, Bobby Wexler, as I recall, on Broad City, and Mittens in Bolt. The
very
voice
good.
Of Mittens.
Very good, Gary. You IFTB'd me.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I remembered these things. Susie,
he
we've met.
You?
Yeah. When have we met, Gary?
Susie, I was on season 4 of Curb. I played the weatherman.
Oh, you're the weatherman, of course.
Well, I'm going to apologize to you because I've wanted to apologize to you for 20 years. Back in those days, there were no trailers. It was like it was like bubblegum and
people
glue
don't believe Gary. When I tell people that, they don't believe me. So thank you. We were such a low budget operation.
So low budget. I showed up at the Pasadena golf course and there was a little trailer, and the first or second said, go to the trailer and find your costume. I go in there, your back is to me, so I don't know that it's you, and Cheryl's in there, and it was like the size of a tiny Winnebago with everybody's clothes over the dinette or something like that.
Yeah.
And I might have tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, do you know what I wear? Do you know what my costumes are? And you said, I'm not the fucking costume person. And then you turned around, and I was already a fan of the show. And I went, I know that, but I never felt that you accepted my apology.
Well,
and so I got off on a terrible thought.
Gary, I don't remember it, but I do remember, and again, people never believe me, that we used to share a trailer, all the actors, from me to you to Ben Stiller to whoever was a guest, we all shared a trailer. And it was actually, we loved it. It was actually really fun. And when you're improvising, it's a great way to build rapport, you know, especially when guest stars come on for us.
Yeah.
I started
with a shitty rapport and I apologize 20 years
later.
Well,
we didn't have any scenes together unless we did in that testimonial dinner.
It was the Funkhauser testimonial dinner.
Right.
And you and Jeff
that
were at a table and
yeah.
I was at a table, and it's the one where Larry, everybody tells him to shut up.
Yeah.
For some reason.
And he can't get up because his back hurts him, and they're all
his back hurts,
stand
right.
And there's the Russian cousins there. And that's one of my favorite episodes, by the way, is the weatherman.
Well, I was the weatherman.
You were the weatherman. Now I look at your face and I see the weatherman in your face.
You see, and again, you're the guest.
And what a great conceit, though. What a fabulous conceit that episode was, that the weatherman is actually giving horrible forecasts so that he could have the golf course all to himself.
Well, that's just it, Susie. I'm going to tell that little bit of story because this is going to open up your opportunity to talk about how that show was done. I was told nothing. I showed up at a little studio and Robert Whitey was there and Larry, and they said, do a weathercast and say it's going to rain on Sunday. So I do it. How was that? It was fine. I can do it better. No, that was fine. Change clothes and do it again and say it's going to rain on Sunday. Okay. I could be better. No, that was fine.
And it was,
and
I recall it.
I show up at the golf course and Larry's going to come down. He's going to argue with you and accuse you, but nobody gets any lines. There's no script. And
That's
I made up some bullshit about the jet stream. And Larry said, the jet stream of bullshit is coming out of your mouth. We did it twice. Cut, move on. I'm done for the day.
And it was a great scene.
Well, but everything was done that
And
way,
he was
essentially,
limping
right?
down onto the thing
Yeah,
like Walter Brennan.
right. Well, I even said at the end, the barn's on fire, the
Yeah,
barn's
I
on, and they left
remember.
that in.
And that was a great improv. That's why you're hired, because you know how to do it.
Well, let's talk about you. You were freaking brilliant in that program. Everything. I became addicted to you.
Oh, well,
Well,
thank you.
I have a question, which was, not only did you become a star, but your wardrobe became a star.
My wardrobe, yes, yeah.
I was talking to somebody who's trying to remember her name because she said, "Oh, please ask Susie this question. Is she involved in making the wardrobe?" She wasn't an
Is
old
that a
woman.
man
That's
or a
why I'm doing
woman who asked that
it. No,
question?
it was a woman, and that was
Oh,
terrible. It's my cold. That's why.
okay.
There.
Nice
Anyhow,
callback.
so she wanted to know, how involved were you, are you with the development of your wardrobe?
Well, I'm pretty involved. I mean, I created the look. The look was my idea. The whole character was kind of my idea. You know, when Larry first hired me, he had the scene in the first season where it was an episode called The Wire, and Jeff brings a fresh air fund kid into our house. I don't have to be clean on this show, right? No, okay.
No.
He just, you know, he hired me for the reason because he wanted Jeff's wife to just, you know, go crazy on him and curse him out, et cetera. And that's why he hired me. But that was the whole extent of our discussion about the character. And in that first scene, he said to me, "I want you to rip Jeff a new asshole," which, you know, I had been in relationships. I was capable of that. And that was the only direction I got. And the rest of it, I just kind of developed who she was. I saw how the house was decorated. Everything we did was on location. So they rented a house. I saw how it was decorated. And then I just had this idea about how I wanted this woman to dress. And I told our wardrobe designer, and each successive, there were three of them over the past 24 years. It was Wendy Range Rao, Christina Mongini, and Leslie Schilling has been for the most recent, last four, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, four. And each one of them took it and made it bigger and bigger and
But
bigger.
these are custom outfits, right? They're not like things
Well,
that they
no, they go out shopping. They
but
go out shopping
and they
and they
find
buy them, and they're mostly
collectible.
designer,
People
and they're
wear this.
mostly, yeah. And
So,
they're mostly really expensive things also, which is always shocking because when I go for my fittings, I look at the tag and I'm like, somebody paid $1,000 for this
no,
fucking
this,
thing. Are you kidding me? But they
well,
did.
the genesis of the Kafkan is that yours? Was that suggested?
The genesis of the caftan happened in season 11 when I have to, when I sew this beautiful banner for the temple, and then Larry asks me to sew a robe for the white supremacist guy, which I
Yeah,
do,
right.
and I put a Jewish star on the back. And that was that. And then Larry and Jeff Schaefer came up with the idea for the caftan for this season that Susie has a new business. They weren't sure it was going to be caftans, and they asked me what I thought, and I thought caftans are perfect. And they came up with Katya's caftan, and we know what ensued. There's a
Yes, yeah, right.
billboard right now as we speak on Santa Monica Boulevard
Wait,
of
it's still up there?
caftans. It's
Wait,
still
it's not with the penis still.
Phallics,
The phallics.
the cocks, you mean?
The cock, the
The
cocks. Yeah, and cupping the balls.
yes, cradling. The
Cradling
I
the balls.
believe the somebody the it's up there because HBO is selling the caftans. So it's like an
Right.
advertisement. And somebody graffitied it in the same way that it is on the show, with the two penises grazing my lips and me cradling the balls. I believe they took the penises down, but
So the
the billboard
Kafkans
is
are
off.
available to buy.
Yes, on
Do
HBO
they have
website.
like a Curb Your Enthusiasm on some, a website where you can go on and buy outfits?
It's the
And
HBO website, I believe.
oh, it's a because I
Yeah,
do have a
they sell
question
all
about.
kinds of things there. We
Oh,
don't make any
do
money. They
what? I
do,
was going to
but
say you don't get a little piece of this
no,
action
I don't get
at
a
all.
dime.
But going back to the wardrobe, well, last episode I saw, which was I thought was hysterical. They're all hysterical. But you're going to walk your dog. And the dog
Yes.
has an outfit on.
Yes, he had a coyote vest.
He had a coyote vest. And I
Yes.
thought, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Doesn't really exist, right? That was just somebody.
No, they do really exist. Of course they do. I think that wardrobe and props or whoever put that one together and made it a little crazier than, but they do really exist. If you have a little dog, which I do, you got to
Yes.
be careful of the coyotes.
I don't doubt
They're
that.
for
I didn't know
lunch, baby.
this. Yeah.
Susie.
Yes, Gary.
You read, I read something that you wrote or something, or maybe I heard it on another podcast. You were saying that people responded to Susie's language, and it was always just so enjoyable to hear you say, you lying piece of shit, cocksucker, husband of mine, et cetera, et cetera. But you said people respond to the language and they're excited by it that a woman is just so forward. But you said that's not what was interesting to you. Do you remember?
What I probably said was it's her comfort with her anger that I think, and I think women especially respond to that because Susie has no difficulty with her anger. She feels no guilt about it. This is a person who has zero self-awareness. She's completely reactive, which is why it's fun to play. You say this, she says that, and she's not going to second guess it, and she's going to punch you right in the face with it.
Right.
You know?
There's no
So
inhibition.
it's her complete acceptance of her anger and enjoyment of her anger that I think that women especially are women come up to me in the street and they're like, you know, my husband says I'm just like you, and they say it to me proudly.
Yeah.
Well, as a man, I was very comfortable with your character because I knew I was hearing what you actually thought. You know, one of the relationship
No
issues is
passive
what do you really mean,
aggressiveness.
honey? What are you really saying? Yes, passive aggressiveness. So it was the way it was with you, which was actually very relaxing
There's
for me.
nothing worse than passive aggressiveness, I think, Gary.
No, that's true.
It's so insidious and so evil and harmful. Whereas anger, you know the grenade you're falling on when somebody's
Yeah.
angry. Otherwise, he's just like, "What? What did I do? And what do you mean? And what?" It's so confusing and manipulative.
I want to go back to the script versus ad-libbing, the improv.
Yeah, the outline. We have an outline.
Right, you have an outline, but does when he puts the actors together, I know he'll say to you, "Rip his, say this, or be mean or whatever." But does he say what I'm trying to accomplish in this scene is to, as a plot point, is I want you to convince this person to do this so that we get to a different place? Do you understand? Does he give the motivation as you say,
You know,
here's
I read
what
all
I
the
need to
outlines.
accomplish.
I read all the outlines. So, you know, for me, I just read the outlines and what the outline basically does is it tells you what needs to happen in the scenes.
Right.
Because every scene, Larry's all story. You take apart Curb, you take apart Seinfeld, it's all about story. So every scene has to move the story forward. Scenes are not just there for to be jokey. So Gary, when you did your scene on the golf course, he told you what he needed you to say. But he lets you just go off and do the jet stream and the this and the that and that.
Right.
And that's why he knows how to cast the right people. Another one of Larry's geniuses is casting. He knows how to cast the right people who are going to bring so much more. He has said
It's
many, many times that I don't know what percentage, but it's something like 95% or 98% of the time, the actors bring things that he never would have thought of. 5% or 3% of the time, he wishes he had written it.
bringing
So,
us. I love that.
As far as
Well,
things that I thought of, I'm going to tell a quick story, if I may. My son is a manager, and one of his colleagues represents somebody who had lunch with Larry, and he was telling him a story about he went on a plane, and the woman on the plane said, "I have to go to the bathroom a lot, so that can you please sit in the middle?" So he switched it, and he told Larry this story, and then he saw it actually on one of the episodes, and he called Larry, and Larry said, "You know what? I forgot where I heard that from. That was you." Because okay, so Larry was very open about that, and I guess that he said he t paid him $5,000, and for doing that. So that would
He paid
happen.
him. Yeah, he
Yeah.
paid him for a story idea. He has people. He well in the last way the show worked, which was when we came back after the 6 year hiatus. It was just him and Jeff Shaffer writing the outlines, and they would get pitches from people. People would come in and pitch ideas, and that's an example that happened at a lunch. But that person could have been a comedy writer who came in and pitched, "Here's an idea. I was sitting on the plane, blah 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 blah," and they would get paid for that idea. Yes, he does these pitches.
Was there anything that you said, oh, this that you would pitch an episode? Do you remember was an episode?
I've never pitched anything, but I've seen things that I've mentioned over the years show up, but they don't have to pay me. Right. I'm
So,
on the show.
I was mentioning to Kenny yesterday that the show has been in existence for 24 years, and he said, "No way, it's season 12." And then, of course, you know, there's that 6-year hiatus. Did you know during that 6-year hiatus that the show was going to come back, or was it over and then Larry got restless? What happened in
Well,
that 6 years?
he called me after episode 8, and I remember it because it was traumatizing. He called me and told me he's done. He doesn't want to do it anymore. And I went into a deep, deep depression because I didn't feel like it was done. And then he did a Broadway play, he did a movie, he did blah blah. But I always knew he was going to come back. I just had a feeling he was going to come back, and he did. Now I don't have that feeling. Now it really
That
feels
was my
done.
next question. But
Yeah,
how
that
do
was
you
my
feel
next
now? Do
question.
you feel as though you're ready to, you're done, you're done too?
You know, look, I'm going to see him tonight. If he said to me tonight, you know what, I changed my mind, we're coming back for episode season 13, I would be there. But I've made my peace with it. I don't think that's going to happen. I really believe that we're done. It's just, I can't really put my finger on what it is. It's just a feeling that, look, we haven't jumped the shark yet. We've done 12 seasons. We've got 120 shows plus the pilot, which I was not in. But I don't know that there's anything more I could do with this character in a
Well, the
way.
body of work is there now. So
It's
it now we
there.
binge watch it. So it's always going to
Yeah.
exist,
And it
you
just
know?
feels done to me. It just feels, look, Larry's, what is he? He's 76. I'm going to be 69. You know, it just feels done to me. It just does. And also, if I, you know, to put a little sadder note on it, Richard died.
Isn't it something I know?
So that also feels, you know, Richard and Larry were so close. I mean, they were like just the best of friends. Larry loved him so much.
Obviously,
And
obviously.
with Richard gone, it feels even more done.
Well, speaking of Richard and others, look, the epicenter of the show was Larry, obviously. The addiction that we developed as an audience for the show was Larry's perspective. Great, we recognize that. However, it doesn't work without you, Jeff, Bob, and Richard, because your relationships were so real.
And
And
Cheryl.
Cheryl, of course, and Cheryl were so real, so authentic together and with Larry. It kept the character anchored in some reality. So they were so rich. Is it impossible for us to see any incarnation
Well, look,
of those characters?
when Bobby died, Bob Einstein, I'm referring to, he plays Marty Funkhauser, that was right after season 9. Look, this was an original voice, like Lewis, a totally original voice that cannot be replaced. Okay, so Vince comes on, Vince Vaughn, to play Freddy Funkhauser, brilliant improviser, adds so much, but doesn't replace Bob. You know, one thing doesn't replace the other. Lewis, you can't replace Lewis. That's a friendship. The truth of the matter is, he could, it's as long as Larry's in it, it could go on. We're all replaceable in a sense. It's Larry that is not, you know. I mean,
Well, it's what
go ahead,
Desi
Jeff.
Arnaz said about Lucy. She said, give 90% of the credit to Lucy. The rest of us were props. Very good props,
Yeah. Well,
but props
I always
nonetheless.
tell Larry that I'm just, you know, he'll say something to me. I couldn't have done all these years without you. And I'll be say, that's true. However, I was just a cog in the wheel of your brilliance. It all goes back to Larry. Yes, I know I was important to the show and I know how much I added to the show, but it's Larry's show. We're supporting players. So, you know, it's interesting. Cheryl was season 8, Cheryl was not in at all because they got a divorce and he got a divorce in real life. So he was like, I don't want to be married anymore. And then he brought her back because he kind of needed her and she's so good with him. And he brought back this new storyline of her with Ted, another one who's so necessary to
Of
the show,
course.
Ted Danson. But could it go on without all of us? Yeah, because it's all Larry's story head. Wouldn't be the
Okay, let's
same.
talk
Yeah.
about moving on. So
Yes, Kenny.
the check that the so you went from this wonderful freedom of ad-libbing and that type of structure. I know from your interviews, your stand-up is a thing of the past. It's not something
Yeah.
you're interested in doing. But pursuing acting roles is something
Yeah.
that would be interested in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a tough thing that you're so associated with this
That's
character.
right. I have the Jason Alexander syndrome. Yeah, and I get a lot of scripts that are Susie Green like and Susie Green light, and I will not do them. I turn them down because I did that character in
Right.
the best possible
Right.
environment that I could possibly do that character. So I'm not interested in that. But there's still a lot of great people out there to work with, great funny people, and there's still a lot of wonderful writers. And I have a couple of irons in the fire now with people who are I'd love to work with, and I still want to work. I love working.
Well,
The
I'll
thing
tell
I miss the
you.
most
Okay.
about Curb, not the thing I'll miss the most. There's a lot, but one of the things I'll miss so much is the community of the work. You show up and there's the crew and so many are people that have been with us for many, many, many years, and other actors and comedians that I've worked with all over. It's community, and I'll
Yeah.
miss that a lot.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
and
I
over
imagine so.
two
But I will say this,
decades.
Susie, that I didn't know. I did a stand-up show called Comic Strip Live. I know a lot of stand-ups and whatever.
I did
And
Comic Strip Live.
oh, you
Who
did?
was the
Years
host?
ago.
I don't remember. It was like
Because I
25
was the
years
host
ago.
for a year
Maybe
anyway,
it
but
was
you didn't do the
you.
show
Yeah.
when I don't. Yeah, I would. You didn't do the show when I was
It was
on.
like 25 years ago I did it in the 90s.
But what I was going to say is that, okay, you've done the character, but now I'm seeing you on all these talk shows and you're like, wow, she's so nice. So you're kind of doing this Susie Green cleansing
Well,
by
you
putting
know what?
on
It's
all
called
these shows.
acting.
People are seeing you
Yeah.
in a different light, which I think is a great thing for producers and other people to realize that you're not,
I'm
that's,
not her. I'm not her. Yeah. I'm not her, but I enjoy playing her. But yeah,
Well,
I
of
think I have
course.
more to offer. I've done
Well,
other, I think the role that I did in Broad City, which I loved doing, was a very different kind of a character. Also, look,
yes.
I'm going to get cast as a Jewess, obviously, and a New Yorker. That's what I'm going to get cast as. But that doesn't pigeonhole me into one type of,
Exactly. But like you say, you're being offered Sue Green like Sue Green light, because you were so good at it. I mean,
Thank
you really,
you.
you defined a new character. We
But I
haven't
do think I could
seen
do
her
other
before.
things.
Of course,
Can I
but
ask
you
a sort
simply
of
did it so
question,
well.
Gary, if I may?
Yes, you
Yes,
may.
you may.
You do a lot of yelling on that show. Everybody's always yelling on that show.
Yeah.
Even Richard Kind was on our show as well. Very good friends. A lot of, is there a
Richard's
lot
a
of
good friend of
tea,
mine
throat
as well.
lozenges? Is there a lot of tea and throat lozenges around the set?
Yeah.
There
Because there's a
really
lot
are.
of yelling. And when I do a yelling scene, I do lose my voice after a number of takes. But I live in New York, so I used to just stay in hotels when I went there. And I would go back to the hotel room and I would be so relaxed. I would just fall asleep. I'd be so relaxed from just screaming and yelling all day. It was like a primal scream therapy. It was great.
I'll bet it
Yeah.
was. I'll bet it was. Hey, I'm going to give you a little piece of information so you can
Okay.
take the Larry if you choose. But you were talking about how Larry integrates things in life and things that he hears into his storylines. I was the person at Saturday Night Live in 1985 at the wrap party at the Rainbow Room. And Larry comes up to me. This is a piece of history nobody knows. Me. And he
You're
shows
hearing
me
it here first, folks.
a little vial of clear liquid, and he says, "I'm going to kill Dick Ebersol tonight." I go, "No, you're not. Yes, I'm going to poison him." Because Dick, he didn't get along very well with Dick.
Yeah.
Dick didn't put his sketches on the show. And I said, "No, no, you're not." Well, so I just kind of kept my eye on Larry. So I'm watching him circle Dick Ebersol at the bar. And I'm thinking, if I say something, I'm going to look like the biggest fucking fool. Dick. Larry's trying to kill you. Get out of
What
the
was it? Did
room.
he say what was in the vial?
I assume it was cyanide or something, but he went so far as to have a vial. Even if it was water, he still has a vial. And he's circling Dick. And I'm thinking, I'm being set up to look like an idiot. But then I left the party and I thought, what if he kills him? I'm an accomplice. I didn't say anything. I was troubled with that. Now, obviously, it didn't happen. He didn't kill Dick. But then I saw a Seinfeld episode where the pieces of that story came to life. Well, I'm
Yeah.
just telling you, I was the confidant. There may have been others, but Larry came to me.
I don't think I know him very well, and I don't think he has murderer in him. He might have murderous intent, but he would never act out on it.
I'm certain that it was all just a ruse that he played, or maybe he just picked something up and thought this would be funny. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never had an answer. I've never really been.
But he uses everything. This is a second example. Kenny brought up the example of the friend on the plane. This is he uses everything, and he used to carry around this little notebook and write everything down.
He did at SNL too.
He's got notebooks filled with ideas, and sometimes they'll come back. You know, five seasons later, we'll try something. It doesn't work, and he'll bring it back six seasons later. He doesn't forget.
Just out of curiosity, I had asked, you mentioned that you know that a lot of roles are going to be thrown out. You're going to be New York Jewish. Kathy Ladman was on, and I was curious about her feeling about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Have you seen that show?
I saw it the first season. I didn't watch it past that.
What? It was supposedly a representation of a New York Jewish comedian.
But none of them were Jewish.
Yeah.
She wasn't. Tony Shalhoub is not. The one who played her mother is not. Rachel Brosnahan, is that her name, I believe? She's not. Yeah. None of them were Jewish. You know, there were things I liked about the show. I loved the old New York. I loved the set decoration and the wardrobe. I didn't buy her as a comic for 1 minute. She was supposed to be kind of, at the time, the only person I could think of at that time is Joan Rivers. This was the early 60s it was taking place. Joan Rivers slept in her car for 3 years because her family threw her out.
Wow.
You don't get up on that stage when you're living a life of comfort. Let me just say that, especially as a woman in the early 1960s, you don't have the motivation to get up there and have your voice out there. It's too scary. It's too hard. And I didn't see any motivation from this woman whatsoever to get up on that stage.
That's really interesting. And you know, I'll ask this not to pry, but whatever, but what was your motivation to get up on that stage?
You know, I started in 1983. I was 28 years old. I was in an extremely bad place in my life. I was depressed. I was suicidal. I was dealing drugs. I was a waitress. I had a horrible boyfriend. I was in a very, very bad place. And I don't know, I had nothing to lose. And I don't know that I would have gotten up and done it if I had been in a good place in my life, because it was too scary.
I think I saw you at Caroline's in about 85. Is that possible? Because I was very aware of your stand-up.
Yeah, 85, sure. I started for real kind of in 84.
Yeah, well, yeah. You certainly didn't show strains of what you just said.
Stand-up saved my life. You know, I started doing stand-up and it was like, oh my God, after about 3 months, I was like, I was so lost. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to be an actress, but I'd take acting class and it was so boring and, you know, stuff like that. And with doing scenes from Tennessee Williams with some scene partner, it was horrible. You know, those scenes that you have to do. You're climbing up some fourth floor walk up on West 45th Street and, you know, they make you a cup of tea and you got to rehearse the scene. It's horrible. Anyway. But once I started doing stand-up, which I had never thought of before, and friends kind of forced me into it, then I was like, this is what I was born to do. And I became a different person. It literally saved my life.
Well, I was just going to say, but you said you're not going to go back to stand-up. I'm not saying you would want to be a stand-up again, that would be your career. But I personally would be fascinated to hear your perspective now as Susie Essman, doing stand-up, because you're a great jokesmith.
It would be different. It would be different. At this point, I wouldn't even, I would have to throw out all my own old material. I wouldn't even know where to begin. I have thought about it. You know, what happened, Gary, was I always suffered from horrible stage fright, which never showed on stage, because the minute I stepped on the stage, I was completely relaxed. I was home. But before, I was a mess. For weeks, sometimes I'd be a mess, knowing not when I used to do it regularly, but you know, later on. But it was so challenging and so creatively interesting to me. And then there got to be a point where it just wasn't that interesting to me anymore. I wasn't interested in writing new material. I just didn't feel the same need for their love, I guess, you know. And if it wasn't creatively interesting to me to go through the terror that I went through, was not worth it. It's
But you
hard.
know what I think is also, I'll bring this up, is that your success and Larry's success for all intents and purposes came later. It wasn't like you guys were
Yes.
in your 20s and whatever,
Right.
and you rose to the top.
Yeah. Which
Probably
is
more of
actually a
a
lot better, I think. A lot better. Because we've all seen, the burnout and people who make, in their 20s are making so much money and they don't know what to do with it. And, yeah, it's better when it comes later. I mean, Larry, how old was he when he even first started doing Seinfeld? He was in his 40s, I believe.
About 40, probably
Yeah.
about 40.
So, yeah, his he was poor. We were all poor.
I mean, I
Let's
guess
do
the
that.
lesson is for a lot of people out there is just because it doesn't happen when you're in your 20s or 30s doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
You know what,
Exactly.
Ken? My best friend is Joy Behar. We
Yes.
started together. She was 40 when she started doing stand-up. Before
Wow.
that, she was a teacher. She was this, she was that. And she started doing stand-up at 40. She was a single mother. She had just gotten divorced, and it was just like, fuck it, I'm doing this. I always wanted to do it. I'm doing, and she did. And she was very, incredibly successful.
All right, question.
Yeah.
You've been on the top of Mount Olympus, okay? You did the stand-up thing. You landed a job 24 years ago working with brilliant people,
How
creating
lucky.
a three-dimensional, four-dimensional character, improvising your lines. It's the top of the game.
It is.
Well, it's like going to the moon. What do you do now?
You go to Mars.
You go to
You go to
Mars.
Mars?
I don't think I'll be going to Mars. I think I'll be going down to Earth because I will never have a job like this again. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. It was such a long run. It was such an amazing run. It allowed me to create I never would have had the career, the money, whatever I have because of this show. And it was a privilege. It was a privilege, and it was a gift, and I feel grateful and all of that. And there's other good things to do. It'll never be as great as Curb. It's never going to be as funny as Curb. Larry used to say that. You're never going to do anything this funny again. Well, he's right.
Well,
But
follow-up question. The concept, though, yes, Larry David is brilliant, and he created this improv based on a really interesting storyline. Ricky Gervais plays in this world. Won't the concept of improvised storylines with great actors, that seems to have a place even beyond Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Here's what I think about that. Yes, it is an it for people like us, comedic, creative people, it is the best way you could possibly work. However, other people have tried it who don't have Larry's story brain. It
Yeah.
works because of Larry's. Larry's is so, I mean, he's brilliant. I think his greatest genius is story. And if you don't have Larry's story brain, you should see what these outlines look like. I mean, they are puzzles that are just,
Yeah.
and he spends months putting them together.
Right.
They don't just happen.
Well, how long for each episode, how long would an outline be?
Well, they used to be about 7 pages because they used to be a lot simpler. Now they're much denser. So now they're more like, I don't know, 18 pages. They've
And are they
doubled.
broken down into
Right.
characters where it just says, Susie Green, this is what's going to happen, and this is what's going to happen, or?
No, it's broken down into scenes. So Susie does Kenny and Gary's podcast, and Kenny says XYZ, and Susie gets mad and goes and tells Jeff about, it's just like something like
Let's
that.
do that scene right now, Susie. Can we do that right now?
Right. Well, it's always interesting, like, how is the zipper going to play out? The stuck zipper.
Yes.
Where is that going to weave back into the storyline? And there were always about three of those things
That's
going
right.
on.
And
And I would marvel.
that takes a lot of thought. I mean,
Yes.
and I read the outlines and I have a comedian's brain and I can't figure out how he got there, which is why I think it's genius and transcendent because you can't see it. Larry's brain works differently and he just figures out. I mean, Seinfeld was like that too. Curb is even more
Yes.
so.
Yeah.
But he just figures out these callbacks that are just unbelievable. And he's a very hardworking person. I mean, he
Yeah.
really works. He spends so much time on the outlines. And then once we finish shooting, he when he's editing, and he edits every episode with our editors, who are terrific, Steve Rash, and I forgot the other guy's name, I'm sorry. But he watches every single take. Every single take. It's a lot of work.
Especially a lot of work is when you're dealing with improv, because you can you're picking
That's
and
right.
choosing from this particular take or that you went through that to
Which
make.
is, I'm glad you brought that up, and that's why we shoot a lot of coverage. Now, a scene like if you're standing in front of the weather map and you're saying tomorrow it's going to rain, blah, 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 that's a simple scene. But when you're shooting a scene like when you were on the golf course and you and Saul Rubinek, it was, wasn't it?
Well, Saul, it was Saul,
And Larry's coming. That needs a lot of coverage because it's improvised and you don't know where it's going to go. So you need a lot of takes.
Honestly, Susie, this is the first opportunity I've ever had to actually get into the nuts and bolts of my experience. Because
Good.
people will say, "Oh, we love the weatherman. There's YouTube things. I
Hey,
set it out
weatherman!
as a and stuff like that." And I'm very proud. It's the top of my resume is Curb Your Enthusiasm. 20 years ago, but the top of my resume. But that's what happened, is that I got a page of a storyline. You are going to be accused of saying that you freed the golf course because of rain. But
Right.
Larry never said that I had made that decision. It was entirely up to me as to whether I actually did or not.
Right. He
Oh,
gives
it
the
was
freedom. He gives the actor the freedom. And
right.
that's because he trusts his casting.
Well, that's what blows me away. And there was no audition. I went in, I talked to Larry. I think
He
Robert
knew
Whiting was
you.
there. We talked, we gave a Larry kind of hug. And then I got a call that to be at the studio the next day.
Yeah, because he
Well,
knew
it will be missed because
you.
I don't know of any other show except for Seinfeld, but Curb Your Enthusiasm, I will laugh out loud.
Yeah,
Oh, yeah.
me too. I was
I don't
laughing
know
out
of any other TV show
loud.
that's funny where I'm sitting in my room by myself where I will laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Well, and now on YouTube, you can go to highlights, you can go to the best of Susie.
Yeah,
You
there's
can
a
go to
lot of
all of the
compilations out there of
compilations,
Susie.
outtakes where you got, which are just hysterical.
Yeah, it's
It's
fun. Listen, it's been an incredible ride, and yeah, I just feel it just I don't know how this happened that I got to be a part of television history. I just don't
yeah,
know
but
how
it's
that
not a matter.
happened.
Well, how it happens is you're given the opportunity, but you're good at it. You take that
You hit it
moment.
out of the
Thank
park. In
that
you.
moment, you execute. You
And
rise to the
actually,
occasion.
Kenny, if I could say this, when I was first hired, I had no contract for a number of years. I was a day player.
This is
And
what
I
Lee
got,
told me this. Yeah,
yeah, I got
I
day
did not know
scale.
that.
I got day scale for the first three seasons, I think. I'm no money whatsoever, you know. And in season two, I was actually only in two episodes, but one of which was The Doll, which is a classic, and where really Susie establishes. But I never knew from year to year if I was coming back.
Yeah.
I never knew. I made no money on the show until probably season five. You know, they gave me a little bump, I think, in season four, but it was minor.
Well, no wonder you were so testy with me when I asked you what clothes that I wear. You know, a little insecure maybe in the
Well, from the
beginning.
people that I spoke to, and I know some people on the show, they would say the one person that made everybody laugh was Susie. That's right.
Well, you know, you always try to treat the crew respectfully and everybody who works there respectfully. It's important. Everybody's doing a job, and when you're in front of the camera, you get all the, you know, the accolades and all the attention, but everybody else is working their ass off and making not as well. In the old days, they made as much money as me, but now not, you know. So you have to treat everybody I always try to find out everybody's name on the crew because I think it's important to
That is
call people
so
by their
important. It really is.
names.
And you're right, people, because I was a TV director for many years. And what people don't realize is the production crew is like, they're there way before anybody else
Way
shows up,
before and way after.
way after. And it's long
That's
hours, it's
right.
long days.
And
So let me.
they're professionals,
Yeah.
and I actually marvel at their professionalism, how focused they are, and how well they do everything that they do. It's a very collaborative filmmaking, television making. It's a
Yeah.
collaborative process. You guys know that.
Well, it can be it depending on who's at the head. So there are people. I mean, I've worked with certain people and showrunners who it's not collaborative. They will not. They don't talk
Really.
to the crew. They don't pay any attention. They have no appreciation of it or whatever. And it's just their vision, and they don't want to hear from anybody. And you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes that one
Sometimes
clear
it doesn't.
vision,
Yeah.
you know,
Well,
works.
Larry, the crew loves Larry. The
I'm
crew
sure.
loves Larry, and they will quit jobs to come because we never have a regular schedule. They'll quit jobs to come work on Curb.
Hey, Susie, did you commute the whole time? Did you keep a residence in LA? I mean, you're a New Yorker,
Yeah, I
and you've
commuted.
always been
Yeah,
the
I
whole
commuted.
time.
Yeah, until season 10. Finally, in season 10, they rented me an apartment for 6 months.
What do you think of
I
LA?
like LA a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like LA, and especially in the winter. I like LA, and I have, a ton of friends in LA.
When I went to New York to do SNL in the mid early 80s, actually, I fell in love with New York, and I'm still in love with New York. And John Belushi, who had just died, though, was famous for having said, "It's Rome, man. It's fucking Rome." You know, New York is modern
Yeah.
Rome. It's
Not
the
the same
center
city.
of
It's
the
not the same city. Not
universe.
even close to the same city.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not the same city, but it's not supposed to be the same city.
I'm not
That
saying it's
is New
supposed to.
York. New
Rome
York is
is the hip place to
constantly
live.
changing, but
Yeah.
it's constantly changing and growing. My mother grew up on 57th Street. She used to come to the city and be like, "It's not like it." No, it wasn't like it was when you lived there 20 years before that. That's New York City. It's not a place like Paris that is always pretty much the same.
Right, the
It's
same. Right.
constantly changing.
I agree. I
My
agree.
grandparents came here as immigrants, and then it was then they my family moved to the suburb. It was that typical thing. And now the next generation is here. And that's we are such a study in humanity, this city.
Yeah, you're
Such a
right.
study in
You're right.
humanity.
I agree. But there are certain things that I used to really appreciate, which was the coffee shop. And when I say coffee shop, I mean like the diner, the
Yeah,
Greek diner that you go in and
right.
all day
I
long.
understand.
Those places are not there anymore.
That's right. The mom and
You,
pops have
right.
disappeared,
Right.
and
Well,
that's
and
sad.
right.
But
40.
something else will come up because it's a place that's vital and alive, and
Yeah, but
immigrant
you know what else it is?
sensibility.
It's true. And
Very
42nd and
touristy,
9th Street, you
very
used to get
touristy.
prostitutes, and now you get M&Ms, right? I mean,
Right.
it
Yeah. Right.
it's
Right.
But I love every new incarnation of New
Yeah.
York. I still go back to visit, and
Yeah.
there's something about all these people and moving around and the sound of horns that it's New York.
And it's
When
also,
I
I
still go
think,
and it's still like I'm coming home. I've been
yeah.
away for a long, but it's always coming home. But can we go
But
back to
it's,
Susie for a second?
I
I want to
just,
hear.
can I just say one more thing
Yeah.
about New York? Because I'm such a New York booster. It is the great human experiment of the 20th and 21st century, because we're all living in these very close quarters. Every ethnicity imaginable, every language, every religion. And for the most part, we get along just fine.
You are,
Yeah.
I say that all the time, Susie,
Absolutely.
that if you are somebody who is disenfranchised in whatever community you are in the world, if you come to New York, you will find somebody just like you
That's right.
and a group
You're
just like you to help you out. So I love
That
that
is
about
very well put, and I'm going to steal that if I can. I will credit you
you.
with the
I said
quote, but
something
I
local.
love no, I'm it's Susie. I'm going to steal
Oh,
from
Susie
Susie. I
said something
like the
local.
fact. Well, before you, about New York just being this
Yes.
microcosm of humanity. I
All right.
like that very
I thought
much.
something
It
well put.
speaks to
Susie,
what calls
we're
me to New
back to
York.
Susie.
Yes. All
Right,
right,
you had a question for
doing,
Susie.
Susie, you've been doing the talk show or the podcast with Jeff Garlin.
Yeah.
You're great in that. You enjoy doing that?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean it's work, because we have to go back and watch every episode and take notes and all of that, which we
Hard.
watched. We did yours already, Gary, the weatherman. But yeah, it's fun to go back and look. And I'll tell you what's interesting is that by and large, I would say 98% of the episodes hold up, except the only difference that I see is technology. Like the earlier episodes, Larry has no GPS and he's getting lost and there's
You're
phone issues
right.
and
The phone with
all
an
the things.
antenna.
And you realize how much in 24 years our technology has really changed our lives. We
So
weren't emailing and
watched every
texting.
single one of the episodes?
Yeah, so far we've done the first 5 seasons, so that's 50.
Well, okay, this reminds me of something I wanted to ask you. There has been an evolution of Larry's character in particular, because when I go back to season one, Larry David was a little more amenable, a little more likely to say, okay. The character has seemed over the seasons to get a little grouchier or a little less patient, much quicker to say, hey, will you come to the party? Nah.
Yeah.
There does seem to have been an evolution in the character and somewhat of the style of the show.
Yeah,
Am I
well,
wrong?
no, I you you know this don't think it's possible to not evolve over 24 years and 12 seasons. And we
haven't.
You know, things have happened in those 12 seasons over 24 years. People have gotten married. They've gotten divorced. We've dealt with deaths. People have had kids. I mean, Larry had two kids, you know, little kids, and now they're two adults. I mean, things have changed over. I got married. I had kids. I raised four kids. You know, all this. I mean, it's just so you change. And so your character, but the thing that we don't do is we don't learn. We change, but we don't learn, because that's not funny. You know, you look at something like The Honeymooner. Ralph had a scheme week after week, and he never learned that these schemes don't fucking work. You don't learn. You just keep making the same mistake over. But we've changed. I've seen my relationships with Larry on screen change. With Cheryl, it's changed. With Jeff.
But you don't learn.
But you don't learn. You don't.
That's exactly funny, though.
That's what
learning is not funny.
That's right.
Learning I think a great lesson would be for people to watch the old Honeymooners, because there was nothing but story and the characters never learning. I think that is, no matter what, they just keep blundering.
Lucy, week after week, begged Ricky for a hat. This is what used to, when I was a kid and I used to watch that show, it was like nails on a blackboard. I hated it, because my little feminist self would be like, why don't you buy your own fucking hat, Lucy? What do you always like, making Ricky buy you a hat and making all these manipulations for Ricky? Go get a fucking job.
Yeah.
Well, I think Larry actually sort of synthesized that.
Would that be, I think you could do a talk show.
A talk show? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you'd be great.
That's a lot of work.
Oh, you'd be great. Well, but you know, sitcoms in the 80s were all about putting a ribbon on the moral lesson the family learned.
Yes,
right?
Not
all
Seinfeld.
But not Seinfeld. That became the antithesis. It was about not learning anything. These people don't evolve.
There was no very special episode.
There was no very special episode. And that was carried into Curb. That was sort of pretty, and still is, Maverick.
Yeah.
No learning.
No I learning. And I think that's why it's so funny. That's why it's so funny. I understand the very special episode, but can you imagine Seinfeld where, Elaine gets pregnant and has a miscarriage and then realizes that she really wants a baby?
Not funny.
Well, what a second. Given the fact that because of all of the consciousness and wokeness and all of those things, I mean, a lot of Seinfeld episodes, I think people have talked about, they probably wouldn't have been able to do that today.
Yes, but not Curb, because Curb is completely incorrect. Yeah, well, first of all, we're on HBO, so it's a different animal. And also, Larry does not bow to any of that wokeness.
No.
And he gets away with it by and large. I mean, there every now and then there's a complaint. I remember one season in particular, but when he pees into the toilet bowl, but he is taking some medication which makes his stream intense, and it splashes up onto a picture of Jesus, and there's a tear. It looks like a tear. He got a lot of shit for that episode. That's the only one I could remember. Palestinian chicken, he thought he was going to. He did not. But I think it's because it's so clear that he makes himself the asshole.
Right. And, you know, I was telling you, I live in a conservative area. And I worked for a company with lots of hardcore conservatives. Guess what they loved? Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Larry David. Hardcore Republicans. Even though he was very clearly
liberal.
Against everything they believed, they still thought, oh, do you hear what Larry did?
Because it's politically incorrect. That's why they like it. Because he's not buying into this wokeness, which, you know, the wokeness might in the end just be our undoing. Who knows?
Well, I think so. I mean,
it's one of those things.
There was a time when we could have a sense of humor about ourselves. And now, and I think it's because that if anybody gets outraged, it becomes clickbait. Right. And
this is another reason, Kenny, why I don't do stand-up anymore. Because when I did stand-up, we didn't have cell phones. It was dark, dirty, low ceiling, smoky, and you could really push the envelope and be out there and figure out where your line was and who you are as a comedian. You can't, I mean, I would hate to have somebody recording me and knowing that
Of
everything
course.
is being, tweeted out or
I know
whatever.
the caller.
It's lost the intimacy of
Well,
what
we
we
have a lot of
have.
comedians on the show, and they say the same thing. It's gotten very difficult. Now,
Yeah.
wokeness was created for a reason. We understand people want it
Yeah.
to be sensitive and inclusive, but
And we
it's a
should be
movement,
sensitive and
and of
inclusive.
course we should, but it's a movement that didn't have any rules. There was no legend to go along with this, so
Yeah.
everything falls into the bucket, and people are now programming themselves to be offended when they otherwise wouldn't have been.
Right. And I
And
think
we're editing ourselves.
it feeds into right wing hands in a
Yes,
certain
it
way.
does. It
Yeah.
does. Because if there's one thing we should have, it's the freedom of thought, the freedom of speech, the
Right,
freedom
right.
to be cynical. And well,
There you
I don't, well,
go.
there you have it. But now the host in me wants to say this. Yes, learning's not funny, but we've learned a lot about you, Susie Essman.
That's a lovely segue,
Well, that
Gary.
wasn't bad, but
Yeah.
you have a
I
game to
haven't
prepare
learned
for.
anything, which
Now,
I'll
what do you
haven't
want to
learned
know?
anything? Fine, I'll continue to
I
try.
have confirmed that Susie Essman is a very nice person. Yeah, I
Is
have
there something
confirmed my
before we go?
suspicion.
Thank you, Gary. Ken, before we go, is there something you'd like to know?
Yeah, Kenny.
Let me see. What did Lee tell me about you? Well, he did mention your parents.
He did mention my parents. Yeah, I had bad parents.
Oh, you
But
did?
it's interesting because now, I mean, they're dead. You reach a certain point in your life where your parents are dead and your kids are all launched, and it's like kind of great.
Yeah, that's gotta be too. That's me
It's
too.
kind of great.
I know.
But they gave me a lot. They did two things for me. One is they exposed me to a tribute. They used to take me to Broadway shows, and there was always a ton of books in the house, and there was always music playing. So they exposed me to a lot of things that were very, very important to me. And the other thing that they did for me is they gave me the tools to be a great observer, because they were, especially my mother, was so crazy that I had to like be constantly watching her and figuring out, okay, who is she today?
That was
So
my
I
mom.
would, I mean, she was nuts. So I would have to like, who is she today? So that I could figure out how to navigate, which gave me a skill on stage to deal with an audience and in life, that's worked for me in a way. So now, after all these years of therapy, and now they're all dead and gone, and I'm an old woman, I could look back and be grateful for those things that could have been negative that were not. I turned
Right.
around.
Right.
Well, you
And
put a nice little bow on that
I was just trying to be
experience,
funny.
didn't
I was
you?
just trying to be funny when I said that I didn't learn anything. I learned a lot. And I
Well,
appreciate
you guys are
that.
fun. Thank
Oh,
you.
so you're a lot
Thank.
of fun. Say hi to Larry at dinner.
I
Say
will.
I was waiting for the next Weatherman episode
But
to
you
give
were
him my
terrific
golf
in that
tip.
episode.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. Susie, I've loved meeting you. Please say hi. And Kenny, should we just sign off now?
I think we could say goodbye to the people at home. Bye
Goodbye,
bye.
guys.
Goodbye, Susie.
Bye,
Thank you so
Susie.
much.
All right, can I just say goodnight?
All right. Well, hey, thanks for watching, everybody. Or if you're listening, we're available on all the popular podcast platforms. We are on DBTV, which is on the Roku, and we have a YouTube channel, The Gary and Kenny Show. Give us a thumbs up. We'd really appreciate it. So until next time, I'm Gary. That's Kenny. See you around. And that was that.